94.9 KUOW Seattle and KUOW.org. I'm Steve Scheer. Isabella Rossellini has presented many faces to the public with Rye TV as an interviewer, as a magazine cover model, the face of Lacombe, in the movie Blue Velvet as a sadomasochistic lounge singer, on the TV show Alias as a spy, just recently as Jack Donaghy's burger-eating wife on 30 Rock, in the film The Saddest Music in the World as a beer baroness with glass legs. She's the author of a self-described fictional memoir, Some of Me, Looking at Me on Pictures and Photographers, In the Name of the Father, the Daughter, and the Holy Spirits, Remembering Roberto Rossellini. With that, she also put out a short film directed by Guy Madden, My Dad is 100 Years Old, where she played every role her father was portrayed by an enormous belly. Her green porno series on the natural world and the sex lives of the creatures on this planet is on the Sundance Channel. Here's a clip from Praying Mantis Sex from season one.
If I were a mantis, I would hold my forelegs like this, and for it, I am known as the praying mantis. I can turn my head almost 360 degrees without moving any other parts of my body. I can change color to camouflage myself and hide in nature. My mate is a cannibal. She has eaten many husbands already. But that doesn't scare me. My sexual drive is the strongest. I would approach her carefully. I would mount her. I would penetrate her. She would turn her head. She would snatch my head off.
She would eat me. But I keep copulating. Nothing stops me. I keep going. Sex!
That was Praying Mantis Sex. If you haven't seen some of these on the Sundance Channel on the web, you should know that many of the pieces are done inexpensively, and yet quite creatively. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I was looking at the Seattle Arts and Lectures description of your appearance, because you're going to be appearing here, and somebody wrote this. I guess you actually wrote this. Rossellini embodies her own definition of, quote, true style, the fullest, boldest expression of a self.
I didn't write this about me.
Somebody else
said
that.
I would be too terribly vain.
Somebody else said that.
I hope somebody else said
that. Well, maybe you were saying that about somebody else. Well, all right, so.
No.
Is that part of green porno? I guess not.
No. Well, I don't know. When I worked as a model, I was asked a lot to define style or elegance. So I think a lot of quotes came from my long career as a model that lasted 25 years. It's hard to define style, but I do think that the people that I admire have very original style. You know, I find that people that sometimes mimic a style to be less elegant, but it doesn't seem to be a very important statement that needs to be discussed.
Hey. You were an interviewer when you started out with Rye TV?
When I started out, when I was 19, I first worked as an assistant to an interviewer. And this interviewing was an adorable Italian who always came late. So I ended up doing a lot of the interviews because he always appeared at the end. Then sometime he just said, just go ahead and do it. And so that led me to do some work. But some of the work that I did was comical work, as now he has been resurfaced with green porno. And actually, the first person that I worked with was the great Roberto Benigni, you know, from Life is Beautiful, that he won the Academy Award a few years back.
Yeah, what'd you do on that show?
Roberto Benigni did, you know, the straight comedy show, his skit. And I did sort of 4 or 5 minutes short films, journalistic reports, but about something curious, mostly about, because I was based in New York, mostly about American life.
Oh, you did? So yeah. you were cruising around New York City and
right.
some odd restaurant?
Odd restaurants. We covered a lot of entertainment, mostly rock and roll and films.
Tell me about where green porno came from.
The idea of green porno came, I was commissioned to do green porno. I was commissioned to do films that were 1-2 minutes long for the internet. The internet, as you know, is becoming enormous. And a television station, including Sundance, was wondering if what they show on the internet, on the Sundance.com, should be exactly the same programming that they do on television. And they decided that maybe it should be slightly different, that some things should be produced for the internet. And one of the things that can be produced is short films, because right now short films don't have a professional outlet. The shortest film you can see is the half-hour television. And yet there is an enormous appetite for short films, and we have seen the success of YouTube, for example, where most films are very short. So I was commissioned to do 2 minutes film, and I was told if the subject is on the environment, we would appreciate it even more, because that's one of the mission of Sundance, because Robert Redford, the founder, the great actor, director Robert Redford, is also a very dedicated environmentalist.
So did you just get a phone call? I said, we have an idea for you. How'd they know that you were going to be a good short filmmaker?
Yeah, they thought it, well, I think that they were trying to gather, they had a very small budget to do this experimental film. So it was very difficult to get George Lucas or Spielberg to do them. So they had to sort of shoot lower. And they were looking at to cast their nets among maybe the young talents that they had seen at the festival or shown films. And I was among them, though I'm not young, but I was young as a director or screenwriter, because I had written a film called My Dad is 100 Years Old, dedicated to my father. And the Sundance co-produced, actually they didn't co-produce, it was produced by the documentary channel in Canada, but it was bought just on paper when they saw a few clips that I put together and they liked it. So that was very helpful and was very great for both the documentary channel in Canada to have an American buyer, because it's always very impressive when you have a U.S. buyer, and also it helped financially, obviously. And so they had an eye on me, and I had written and performed all the roles in My Dad is 100 Years Old, which is a 20-minute film, but I asked my friend, the director Guy Madden, to direct it for me. I didn't think I could do that.
Yeah, you were Alfred Hitchcock, you were
Selznick, Chaplin, Fellini, and my dad, and my mom. Yeah. I played them all,
you played
and myself.
Them all. Talking to them, talking to each other, and talking to your dad, who was portrayed as a large belly.
Well, I didn't know. Now it seems to me that the more I write, the more my style is a sort of kind of a surrealistic style. But I didn't know that. I always wanted to direct and make my own film, but I didn't know which style. But now I find this style to be the one that suits me the best. It's the way I think. I wanted to show, the reason why I made My Dad is 100 Years Old is that in 2006, my father would have been 100 years old, being born in 1906. And I knew that there were going to be several retrospectives around the world. In fact, there were in London, in New York, at the very prestigious Museum of Modern Art, MoMA, in Los Angeles, at the Cinémathèque Française, at the Cinémathèque in Toronto, and in Madrid. And that I was going to be asked the same questions by the press. And I wanted to say something that I didn't know. I didn't think the press was going to ask me. And that was the discussion that I heard as a child about what was the responsibility of cinema, or does cinema have a responsibility? And according to my father, films to him were a moral obligation. And for others, films is just entertainment to distract you, to amuse you. And he was very opposed to that. And so I made all these people talk and discuss, and Guy came up with the idea that I would play them all to make it explicit to the public that this is the way I understood it.
Are films a moral obligation to you too?
I don't know.
Is that thinking evolving for you?
Well, I don't know. When I did my little green porno there, I can't really talk about my body of work as a filmmaker. My entire body of work as a filmmaker is about 50 minutes long. But It seems, you know, if I can, when I did Green Porno, I wanted two reaction. I wanted the film to be entertaining and comical. I didn't want them to be just a simply documentary. But I also, besides making people laugh, I wanted them to have a second reaction that was to be, oh, I didn't know that about an earthworm, or I didn't know that about a whale. So that there was also the surprise, the wonderment.
The issue of focusing on animal sex and behavior, that came first.
No, it came first to emphasize the sex, because I've always been interested in animal behavior, but most people are interested in sex. So I thought, okay, I can make my film and satisfy both my passion on animal behavior, but also, react to the interest that there is out there about sex. And so we talked about the sex life of animals.
I mean, how did this evolve? Your passion for wild.
I always had it. You know, I was, as I was born with straight hair and, I was born with brown straight hair, I was born with love for animals. I always loved animals since I was a little child. And they always made me wonder. And I think that's not only I'd like them because they are cuddly, but sometimes they're not cuddly at all. Like elephant seals are not cuddly, or spiders aren't very cuddly either. But they make me wonder the big questions. Like, I think some people have this kind of reaction if they look at the sky and they see stars and they wonder, you know, what is out there? Or the ocean, or, you know, there are things that are, they bring you to, they lead you to the big questions, sometimes questions that don't have answers, but you can't help yourself but asking. And animals have this power. Even my pet dog has this power to me.
What's your pet dog?
Oh, I have several. I have three pet dogs and plus guide dogs. So I have right now four dogs.
Yeah. So are these the answer to the question of whether films are a moral obligation that you were talking about when you're listening to your father?
I think I don't know. Well, maybe, you know, if wondering about the big questions of life is a moral obligation. I think that for my father, the feeling that cinema was a moral obligation came as a direct reaction to Second World War. Italy was the enemy. Italy was a fascist country allied with Hitler. And my father, during the war and right after the war, wanted to give voice to the civilian, to how the people, the one, not the political, not the fascist Italian, but how the human Italian lived the war. And that was his moral obligation, to give the voice to the voiceless. And his films, such as Rome, Open City and Paisa, that were called neorealistic because it looked very real. They look like documentaries, but they are feature films, had an incredible power of redeeming the enemy, the Italians, in the world. America totally accepted this film, made them hugely successful. Italy was reintroduced to the world and embraced, thanks to this neorealistic film.
Isabella Rossellini is our guest, talking about her father's film, Roberto Rossellini's films. That's pretty amazing that art would have that power.
Oh, it does have that power, no, doesn't it? Or am I naive? I think it does.
No, I don't think it is, but it's pretty amazing that happened, and with his films. It's Weekday, I'm Steve Scheer. Isabella Rossellini has written a few books about her life, a self-described fictional memoir.
Yes.
So it was fictionalized. It was a memoir, but you had some conversations with dead people.
Exactly, there it is. You know, again, a sort of a kind of surrealistic style that I didn't know I had it in me, but it seems that if I want to tell a story, I have to make up something that is slightly surreal to say what is in my mind. I think it was promoted as a memoir or as a biography because it is more commercial value into it. But actually, it's a series of little reflection on modeling, on acting, on animals, and of funny anecdote about my life, but I can't say that it is a real autobiography.
All right, so the film that your mother made about the couple that went, George Sanders.
George Sanders was in the Viaggio in Italia, trip to Italy, George Sanders.
So at first people were saying, or was this later, people were saying, oh, this is a representation of your parents' own relationship as it disintegrated. But after they divorced, they stayed friends?
They did stay friends. Yes, they did stay friends. I mean, I remember as a child having dinner with both of them, and they had great laughs, and I could tell that there was tremendous affection and tremendous love to each other.
You know, so reading about you, you stayed close to both your parents. I don't know why, but I like that part of the story, that you guys all stayed pretty close all the way up until they
yes,
passed away.
They died, unfortunately, they died a long time ago. My father died in 1977 and my mother died in 1982. So I lived more years of my life without them than with them. And it's extraordinary to me because I think of them daily. They have been an incredible presence in my life.
Artistic presence as well, both of them?
Artistic, but just parental presence, you know.
Parental presence.
Yeah, parental. And their voice scolding me, don't do this, do that. It's still very strong.
Did you take what you learned from them and the way they lived their lives after they divorced into your own life, the way you raised your own kids?
I think so. And, you know, it's not so clear that I can you know, that's what I took and this is what I... But I did remain in the same domain of cinema, in the same lifestyle. And my friends are mostly artists, as they were their friends. I have a curiosity in science, as my father had a great curiosity in it, too, and wanted to make films about science when he died. And so he was at Rice University developing a new series of films about science. I don't know that he would have done green porno, but I mean, he left me with a certain curiosity about science, for sure. I think that curiosity was highly valued in my family. It wasn't career. I never heard them talk about career move. I learned all this language later on with agents that talked to me about my career and my career move. And I wasn't quite sure what they talked about because my parents, who had the hugest career I've ever known, never talked about it. They just did what was interesting to them. And curiosity what's led them.
What does a model bring to the photograph that is, I guess, akin to acting, perhaps?
Yes, completely. Because you don't bring the perfect nose or perfect eyes, because there is not such thing. I mean, obviously, models, they have to have a certain look that people find it pleasing. And they have to have, most of all, they have to be a certain size. They have to be at least 5'10" today, and they have to be underweight today, too. And that is because you're wearing the prototype of clothes. You're wearing clothes that are going to be shown to buyers or in magazines or in the runways, and they're going to be placed the order, or how many of them has to be produced. So models, they have to be the same body shape. So that is the essential thing. Now, there is no beauty without emotion. Diana Vreeland, a great editor of Vogue and Harper's Bazaar, said.
There are photographs that you've done that you're particularly proud of, you think?
They took of me because I never take photos.
Yeah.
Well, I think that to work with a great photographer, Richard Avedon, Bruce Weber, Steven Meisel, Peter Lindbergh, Paolo Roversi, that has been an incredible experience in my life. And I adore photography. I feel that maybe even a stronger affinity sometimes than acting. Acting, I did a lot of acting in English. And English is not my first language. And I've always struggled a little bit with my lines and say them correct and correct the accent. So that modeling was free of it. I didn't have this handicapped voice. And I felt much freer as a model than as an actress. Mm. Yes.
All right. Favorite role in movies or television?
Probably I liked Blue Velvet because it was such a challenging, difficult role, and working with David Lynch was extraordinary. I also liked a film that is not as successful. It was a Dutch film called Left Luggage, where I played a Hasidic Jew, which was a big stretch for me. But I could see that acting is not only psychology, but it can be anthropology. It was interesting to learn about a community of people that I didn't know about, and I was raised Roman Catholic. So it was very interesting to learn so much about the Hasidic community.
I also like the fight you had on 30 Rock with...
Yes. And 30 Rock is just great.
That was very funny. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Isabella Rossellini is our guest. This is 94.9 KUOW Seattle.